Hey everyone, thanks for listening to my podcasts here on the Hullerstubber feed. Do spread the word to other people if you think they might enjoy them. Do listen to some more if you think you might enjoy them, but do enjoy this one. I am shortly going to be on tour with my new stand-up show, Can I Have My Ball Back? Head to richardherring.com/ballback/tour for all those dates. Some of them are sold out, some of them have hardly sold anything. It would really help me if you bought tickets to the ones that aren't sold out. Either way, as soon as you can. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. It's about cancer and testicles. One of them's not funny, but one of them's really funny, and it kind of cancels out the unfunniness. I'd say just on average, slightly more funny. So I hope you'll come along. If not, keep enjoying the podcast. We'll be back in September at the Leicester Square Theatre with more live podcasts. Maybe a few Edinburgh ones before then. Sit back, relax, and enjoy this stupid podcast you've chosen to listen to.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, my finest friends. Welcome to another Hullerstubber Book Club. This week, I am talking to Laura Lex about her book, Pivot. And she's right here now. How are you doing, Laura?
I'm all right, mate. How are you?
Good. I'm pretty good, too. Thank you.
I love you. I just have a naked mannequin behind you.
That is my Champion of Champions Taskmaster prize. We are recording this on video. If you're listening on audio, if you become an Acast Plus member, you can watch this video as well and see our lovely faces next to each other on a screen. We had you on talking about Klopp, actually, mainly the last time you were on Rahalista, but you're a comedian and writer. I think everyone knows that.
It's nice, that, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And I love how excited you are in the audiobook when you say, I've read a book at the end. It's worth listening to the audiobook just for your delight at the end. As you, I've read it. I've read my whole book and I wrote it. It's brilliant. Let's briefly, just for people who didn't listen to the last time, tell us a little bit about Klopp, actually, to start, which is your first book.
So this was a book that I wrote based on some tweets I did about loving how sensible Jurgen Klopp was. I sort of did an imaginary thread. Well, the thread was real, but it was imaginary, the thoughts in it. All thoughts are, I suppose. But anyway, it was all about wishing I was married to him because he's so sensible and he could solve all my anxiety by being super sensible. And somebody said, hey, why don't you write this as a book? And so we did. We turned it into like a gift book type thing, like a toilet book, you know, little mini chapters of a funny idea. Yeah. and sort of stretching that out. And then they said, well, look, you clearly like writing. Do you want to write a novel? And they said, hey, write a novel. So I did. It was fun.
You did. And it's absolutely fantastic. I really enjoyed it. And I think it's a very assured and first novel. It's, you know, it really all holds together. The characters are brilliant. It's very funny. It's a sort of, I think it's not rude to say that it would be a great book to buy on the plane and
yes.
take on holiday.
I think it's perfect for that. It's a perfect, like, sit in the sun and just be somewhere nice in a book and in real life, you know? Like, that's exactly what I wanted, is a book where you don't have to be on edge going, when's the shit thing going to happen? Like, just have a nice time, guys. Don't worry about being sad for half an hour.
Yeah, there's a few twists and turns, and the characters go through a little bit of this and that, but it's basically just about female friendship. It's about netball, but it sort of isn't about netball as well, I would say. So
yeah.
The netball is is good. If you're interested in netball, I think you'll enjoy it. And if you've since I've received this book, I've got a friend who's already playing netball. I was at the pub with some other parents the other day, and I said, "Oh, we're thinking of starting a netball league." I said, "You've got to read
Pivots." But that's half of what started the whole thing, which years ago I was gigging. Have you ever done G Live in Guildford?
No.
It's got an amazing room, and then there's a studio room that can be quite hard work. They're lovely people. It's a lovely venue, but it can be quite hard work. And I think I was comparing there, and there was a big group of women in who all played amateur netball together. And I just sort of did, like, it was the first time in about 10 years I'd heard the word netball. So I started sort of chatting to them about, like, chest pass and bounce pass and, like, all the different things, you know, all these rules that you're like, God, there were so many rules. And the other women in the crowd really loved it. So I turned it into some stand-up, and then I sort of I had this idea for a plot, and then it kind of melded with this idea of a netball team. And that's when I started writing, like, this world of these characters, was just looking at women's reaction to netball and going, yeah, we really learned that for like 12 years and then left school, and there's nothing like you can follow it up with, so you just stop paying any attention to it.
Yeah, I thought what was interesting is that a lot of young people, young men and young women, write books with a central character that, if it is not themselves, is something similar to them or someone of their age. And although there is a character who's about 30 in this book, it's really about middle-aged women. So the main character is 58 or 59, Jackie Douglas.
Yep.
And I thought that was quite interesting, an interesting choice for you to write. And you do very well. But so why did you choose to write about people of my age rather than of your age?
I think it was because when I first started writing this, it was a TV show. So I wrote it as a script, first of all. And I wanted to write something that was full of all the older actresses who are brilliant but don't get main parts anymore.
Yeah.
So I sort of wanted it to have like a Calendar Girls-esque cast of just incredible comic actresses that have all got a bit older and so, you know, been put out to pasture. And because I wanted to write about somebody just sort of, so Jackie is the main character, and she's 58. She's happily married. She's got children. One of them's got a grandkid. She's retired. She likes her house. You know, she's fine. And then her husband walks out on her, and she suddenly feels like everything in her life is in the past. And I wanted that to really hit. I wanted there to be this feeling of, like, what do I do for me, and what is left, and what's left in my life now that the main things I wanted to do, aka having kids and, you know, living this big family life, once that's over, how do you maintain this happiness? So she needed to be older to really have that hit properly, I think.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. And I think it's, but you write it very well. I mean, you get into the mindset of exactly that, because it is, you know, it's that feeling suddenly when you've invested your whole life in a marriage and a job, and then things get taken away from you, or, you know, the husband leaves and you have to reassess everything. It's the sort of perfect age to do that, but you really kind of get inside that, which is, you know, that's what being a writer is about, of course. Yeah. is understanding the characters.
I'm glad that comes across, because that was a big fear of sort of going like, oh God, I'm writing something. But I think the anxiety doesn't change, does it? Like, I'm 35, no. And my insecurity that my comedy career has passed me by and I'm never gonna do anything, that is, I imagine I'm just going to feel the same as this, but maybe more intense when I'm 58. Like, I think if you're insecure, you're insecure. Like, that sure, those feelings will find you no matter how honestly they should be there.
Sure. Were you aware of the comedian Jack Douglas when you called your main character?
Oh, no.
Jackie Douglas. There's a guy, for someone of my age, I thought it might come up, but then I quite like that it doesn't.
Oh, no, I've never heard of Jack called Jackie Douglas.
Jack Douglas was, I think, in like the Carry On. I can't really quite picture him, but he was in the Carry On films and things like that. It was that sort of genre of actor and stuff. I can't, just every time people call Jack Douglas, it made me laugh. That's good. But, you know, but I quite like, because often you'll have someone who's named in a sitcom or something, has the name of someone famous.
Yeah.
Wesley Snipes in
30 Rock is a good example. It's Michael Sheen's character called Wesley Snipes. And it's quite nice to have that without it being referred to. But I just wondered whether there was a talk about Googling the name. I can't even remember if it was Jackie's name who was being Googled. But you'd get a lot of things about Carry On films.
Yeah, she never understands, because she's an ex-nurse. She never understands the references to Nurse Jackie that people make.
Oh, that's right.
Because she's not seen it. But I've not heard. Right, that's my afternoon's homework.
That's just show business, and that's how generations work. It's terrible that
the Taskmaster champion of champions would know this sort of stuff.
And I was really, and this is something I hadn't noticed, but you wrote an article about the fact that you didn't make physical descriptions of the characters, which I think, you know, and it doesn't matter. I didn't actually even notice until I was halfway through the book when I read that article. I thought, oh, that's interesting. So can you tell us about your thinking about not, why you didn't describe your characters' appearances?
Yeah, and then can I ask you what you pictured? Because I'm fascinated now. So it was a two-pronged, well, maybe three-pronged. One, I can't picture things visually. I don't know what it's called, but I can't picture images.
I do. I've got it too. It's called aphantasia.
That's it. So I picture the spellings of words. So if somebody says someone's a brunette, I think about the word brunette written down, and that's how I think. So quite often in books, you know, I love reading, when they describe something physically, if it's not, I just ignore it, or I just go, no, I don't think so. You've got that wrong. And I just move on. I can't build up that image from their description. You know, if they go, they're tall and red hair, and I've immediately just moved on. So it's partly that. And then maybe I'm a bad writer in terms of physicality because of that. But every time I tried to describe any of it physically, it felt so hack and weird. And like, I'd be describing Jackie, and I picture Jackie in myriad different ways, depending on what she's doing. Like, sometimes she's Mira Sayal, sometimes she's Alison Steadman, like sometimes she's my mum, she's my husband's mum. But when I tried to write it down, I was like, right, what do I actually think? So I was like, okay, so I think she's like white with blue eyes and blonde hair. And then when you try, you can't just say, hello, this is Jackie, she's white with blonde hair and blue eyes. You have to be like, blue eyes that sparkled, or I mean, you're like, well, they're not that sparkly. And then I'd want to say things like, you know, she's a bit wrinkly because she's 58. But then you want to be like, she's not like covered in wrinkles. She's not like a sharp A. She's just a normal amount wrinkly. But then it felt like everything I was writing was basically me trying to say, just picture a normal woman of 58, however you picture that, because it doesn't matter. And then it was like, well, then just let people picture that. Don't bother.
I think that's interesting. You know, I think it's true. And I didn't notice. I don't know what I do exactly, because I've only just realised I can't make mental images and stuff. And so, if I'm forced to think about what I was thinking, I can't even tell you what I was, because I wasn't picturing someone, but I was. But I just had in mind. Yeah,
someone, just like an idea of a person.
Yeah, it's just like, but you don't need. I mean, I quite like it in terms, especially for women in novels. Are often, you know, either beautiful or not beautiful, and that's the way they're described.
Yeah.
And it's sort of nice to not. I mean, I guess the only thing in this, there's one character whose nickname used to be Janet the Planet.
Yeah.
And so she obviously at least used to be large, but then the implication is she isn't necessarily as large now. But that's, we don't know anything about her. She would be the character. As the younger character that in another book would be this sexy, willowy, blonde girl, you know, but actually you're left to think about, you know, I'm probably thinking of like, someone more normal, maybe one of my wife's friends or something like that was in my mind there, one of the mums from school. I could sort of picture that sort of thing. So, you know, that's, and then, so, you know, you do, when you're reading a book, however you create mental images or however you enjoy it, I think it's quite nice that you create your own world. What was interesting as well, because I guess because it wasn't, the main character wasn't anything like you, I didn't really think about you very much, which I think is quite impressive in a book, especially with a book that's written by someone you know, right?
Yeah.
So I wasn't like when I was reading Andrew Hunter Murray's book, I was sort of thinking of Andrew Hunter Murray as the main character just because he isn't really like it, but it just that was convenient. But with this one, I think because it was you were immediately taken away, and so yeah, I didn't I didn't mind that, and I didn't notice it. And I actually, you know, it's sort of refreshing to see a book where it's not about, you know, who's beautiful and who's not beautiful, and you sort of imagine, you know, you just need this. What's lovely about this, and the characters are very quickly, very beautifully drawn. You get a real idea of friendships. And the new friendships that turn up, it's just, you know, it's this little journey where these people discover new friends, and, you know, through coincidences and through just bumping into people. But you're very good at getting characters straight away. You know, you immediately knew what kind of person you were dealing with as each one came in, but they were believable and I think what's lovely is it's just such a likeable group of people.
That's exactly what I wanted to sort of. I wanted a book where you could have like a random selection of women without them working in the same place or without them being mums, because I've never been able to conceive, and so I don't have children yet. So it can be a bit triggering, like that most coming together stories about women are some sort of like, and they all came to the same baby group, or they've all got mums, or, you know, like there was this whole spate of TV like Motherland and other things that were all about parenthood, and I was like, I wonder what I can do to get like women that don't know each other together without it being a workplace hilarious sitcom or whatever. And then I sort of thought, well, like sport, there's so many sport vehicles for things, but I couldn't necessarily think of one about women. So I sort of thought, oh, netball, that will be fun.
Yeah. And the fact that none of them are particularly, I mean, maybe a couple of them are slightly keen to play netball and know what they're doing, but they're not really, none of them really, I mean, they sort of fall into it by accident.
Because netball's not really shit. Netball is so shit. It's so rubbish. Oh, dreadful sport.
But that's what's sort of lovely about it is it's just these people who just, you know, they're all looking for someone or something to, you know, like for just something to occupy themselves, and there's something missing, I guess, in all of their lives, and this gives them a reason to be together, and you know, and the sport is absolutely peripheral to it, and their ability, you know, they don't have to get better at the sport for it to make sense, which I just really love, because I think, you know, the obvious route to go would be, oh, he got this ragbag of idiots and they've never touched a netball in their life, and oh, but they work together and they become amazing at netball. But it's about them coming together and becoming good at being friends and feeling happy in themselves.
I fought so much with that when we were initially like ironing out the plot, and there was like maybe they've got to try and win the league, and I was like, no, like I'd love it if they've scored by the end of the book. And then there was sort of like, you know, discussions and all, they're like, well, maybe there's some sort of, you know, what do they need to do to save the team, like do they need to raise the right amount of money to save the team? And I was sort of sitting there thinking, like, I feel like I've read that. I've watched that. I've watched the, like, and, you know, these are middle-class women. It's not that expensive to have an amateur netball team. Someone's got the 20 quid subs they can bung in. Like, I didn't want any of those usual, I don't know, dramas to be in there. I did want it to just be about the dramas going on in your head that you've blown massively out of proportion, which then that got terrifying as I got closer to publication and I was looking at it and going, God, there's just no plot. There's just nothing. Why would anybody enjoy this? But, and then you're going, no, Laura, that's what you wanted to do. You wanted to make it about the reality of even when there's not massive drama in your life, there's drama because your brain's created it for you.
I think that's true, but I think there's a lot of plot and there's a lot of drama, and I was very, you know, I was very keen to see what happened. I was kind of, you know, I had ideas what might happen. I was hopeful certain things wouldn't happen, you know, and so like I was, you know, I got through this book really quickly. I really enjoyed it. Like, you know, I know these books aren't, it's sort of weird as I'm talking to more authors, especially the female authors, that most female authors are writing for a female audience, or that seems to be. And you know, I think this book is probably being pushed as a book for women, which is great.
Yeah.
But you know, it'd be a shame if men don't read a book like this because it's about a subject that they might not know about, or because it's about women. because, you know, it's very enjoyable, but also you might learn something about women if you read these kind of books rather than Bravo 2-0. You might actually have a happy life, and you'll go, oh, is that what I have to do to make women happy? Okay, it's much easier than I thought.
Well, I was on. It's so funny you bring that up, because I did. Sorry to cross podcast mention, but I did Guilty Feminist a couple of weeks ago, and yeah. I was on with the women that run the Women's Prize for Fiction and Laura Bates that wrote Everyday Sexism. And she was talking about the statistics on men that read female authors are tiny, that women tend to read 50-50 male and female authors, but yeah. men just very rarely read female authors. And about how when the Women's Prize for Fiction got set up, it was all because even though women published like a huge amount of books, only 9% of shortlisted books for awards went to women, and how like it the like terms chick lit and stuff like that, because you go, oh, it's just about feelings and thoughts, so it's not important, and how nonsense that is. It's really fascinating. But yeah, like, and I can't remember which one of them said it, but just all this genre of like, women are such a mystery, and you're like, pick up any novel written by any woman and we're laying out our thought processes. When my husband read this, Tom, he's comedian. Yes. When he read it, he read one of the draft copies for me. It's probably one of the first pieces of work I've ever done where he didn't get involved through the creative process. And I kept saying to him, like, I'm really looking forward to you reading it, but there's no point me asking you about stuff going through because you're just not the demographic for it. And he got halfway through and he just looked up at me and went, I just can't believe anybody thinks this much. Oh, babe.
Yeah, that might be the problem with male readers. Do I have to think as well?
Yeah.
I didn't realize I had to think. And I didn't. It interests me, and I hope men will sort of try and break away from that, because, you know, but it's sort of like, I don't want to just read about people exactly like myself anyway. So it's kind of it's interesting to go into a world that isn't your world, or to see someone else's perspective on something that is your world. So, and you know, for me, if something's funny, that's you know, if it's meant to be a funny book and it's funny, then I want to be involved because I like funny stuff. So you tick all the boxes on this.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
I mean, it's interesting you say that it came from a script, because I was going to ask you it felt very much like this could be a sitcom. This is a great sit for a sitcom.
Yeah.
Are you thinking about trying to revive that script, or is doing it as a novel made it?
I'd love to revive it, and I'm hoping that in a post Ted Lasso world where cozy, nice TV is a bit more being commissioned, because that was the problem I hit before. This was maybe 6 or so years ago, maybe even a bit more. We were trying to pitch this, and one TV were just saying like, no, it's Scandi murder noirs is all anybody wants, is moody, gripping things. And then two, they didn't want to make stuff about older women. They just said women and people of that age already watch TV. The main push is to get 16 to 25 year olds to watch TV. So I'm hoping in a sort of world where people are craving cozy TV a bit more, there will be more chances to have that conversation. Because can you imagine the cast of seven actresses that are all like getting their teeth into this comedy netball? I just think it's brilliant. And yeah, if it's only ever the novel, then I'm so proud of it and I'm so thrilled. But I would love to see like the British comedy elite prancing around in netball bibs.
Well, sadly Kay Mellor, who died last month, but I was re-listening to her announcement that she did. And, you know, if this felt like an idea that, you know, that it felt like one of her ideas that you could get, you know, she did some gritty stuff, but she did some sort of fun comedy stuff as well. And, you know, this really feels like you've got everything in it, because it's, you know, there's funniness. The netball is a funny game. There's lots of funny stuff in that. But also it's just those relationships, the falling in and out between friends. You know, it's all this universal stuff that would definitely... Yeah.
I mean,
I think Fat Friends
was probably one of my formative TV experiences as a teenager, watching that and it being so funny and nice and lovely, and maybe on a little bit too late. So I probably wasn't meant to be watching it, but Mum would watch it with me anyway. Like, I love that sort of TV. I'd watch that endlessly. I never need to see another person get raped or murdered for my entertainment ever again.
Yes, well, you know, it's got that factor. It's got that. Were you always committed to the word pivot? Was the title Pivot?
No, in the original, in the TV version, it was Bibs.
Right.
But then we thought that's going to look a lot like a book about babies.
Yes, so, that's true.
But then Pivot seemed to really work, because it is about your life pivoting. And in the stand-up that I do about netball, the pivoting bit, just you'd crease people up, like land on one foot and pivot with the other foot. That was a big thing you had to learn in netball, was which was your landing foot, and then you could only move one foot after that. So it sort of seemed to work. I've just got to get a copy to David Schwimmer and get him to do the pivot.
Yes, that'd be good. As I was doing my run, when I was listening to this, it struck me, although we don't know what race any of the women are, because you have failed to describe any of them, but I thought it could be called White Women Can't Jump.
Yeah.
They're not allowed to. Because they might be a bit longer. I think pivots are better, because they're not allowed. I mean, netball is an insane game.
Apparently, it was developed. I don't know whether this is true or not, but I did hear that it was somebody trying to describe basketball via letter correspondence. And so once it reached where it was going, it all got very convoluted, and no one had actually ever said, oh, you can dribble with the ball at any point. So,
right. that would make sense. And so let's talk about the audiobook. I actually did a bit of reading and a bit of audiobook with this book, because I had the book first.
Can you do switch between the two?
Yeah. Because it's quite nice to be able to, occasionally you can do, with my other book today, I did both at the same time, which was all right. I think like with an academic book, sometimes that can just help really cement it into when you're losing concentration, which wasn't a problem with this book. The other book was a bit more academic and beyond me in places. So it's quite nice to do both. But yeah, no, I quite like, you know, I really like audiobooks, because you can really, you know, get through them while you're doing other stuff.
Yeah.
As long as, you know, especially exercise and driving and stuff, where you can concentrate enough. But you've got some time. So I mainly listen to audiobooks. You did a very good job, and you did accents and stuff. they're very believable accents.
Thank you,
from Roz.
There were some retakes of some of Roz's lines. Let me tell you that. Oh God, there were just parts of some of those days where I was like, I can't remember how my mouth works anymore. I was like, it's passable. It'll do, if nothing else.
it was good. You know, you're very obviously a great performer. So it makes sense, for not everybody does their own book, and sometimes it's not the right thing.
No, I had to audition to do mine.
Did you?
Yeah. They said, no, we'll get an actress in. And I was
really?
Like, they said, oh, it's not normal for an author to read their own book. And I was like, you do know that I've done way more reading of things and podcasts and performing than I've done writing. Like, if anything, I shouldn't have written the book, but I should definitely be the one reading it. And they were like, oh, we just don't know because you're not as old as Jackie. And I was like, Jackie's not the narrator. Like, please let me read the book. Like, you've got to let me read the book, or at least let me choose the reader.
Yeah,
and in the end, I submitted a couple of chapters. I just sat here in my office and read a couple of chapters and sent them off to them and went, look, I promise you I can do this. Sent them some chapters and they came straight back and went, oh, yeah, you can. All right, fair enough. Like, thank you.
Well, it's good that they made that. I mean, it seems weird that it took them some time. I think, it can be a great thing for the author to write, read it, especially, I think, if they're a performer.
Yeah.
It sort of feels to me too weird. If you've got a comedian and it's a funny book, it feels like a weird choice to hand it over to someone else.
Yeah.
But, you know, often there are some audiobooks where I've thought, yeah, you should have probably got someone else to read that for you, mate. Because it's a very tricky discipline, right? I'm just about to do mine in a couple of weeks, my latest one. And I haven't done a long one. Now, how many words is this book? This is probably
70, 80, like that, yeah.
So it's about the same as mine. So it's going to take about 3 days, I'm guessing. It was, yeah. So that's quite a
intense. And you're sort of like, well, it's just reading, but then there's a point where your tongue and mouth can't keep up with your brain anymore and you just sort of get a bit sloggy with it. But I find the producers on these, they're so clever. They're so gentle with your ego of going, we're just going to skip back a little bit and you do this. You go, oh, I fucked it up, didn't I? Like, rah, rah, rah. But they're so nice and gentle with you and like making notes on where you've messed up and getting you to go back and do stuff. And it's amazing how you start and you think it's all fine and then you do the whole book and then they say, right, we're just going to go back and redo chapter one because you've woken up now. And so you redo all the stuff you did at the beginning that was a bit bland where you were nervous. The studio was the top of a flight of stairs in a Brighton townhouse. So the first 15 minutes after I sat in the chair, he was like, you just have to sit there until your heart rate goes back down. Otherwise, we can really hear like how tired you are from climbing those stairs.
Oh, well, that's good. And as I say, it's worth listening to the audiobook just to hear the bit at the end where you say this book was written by me and I've read it. It's great. but that's what's lovely. I mean, the book is so joyful, but I think it's, you know, that it's obviously for you, it's such a passion project and you're so proud of yourself and correctly so for having done it. It's an amazing thing to write, I've never written a novel and I'd like to, I think, but it's very hard to do. Yeah. I think there's a lot of things to keep in the air and there's a lot of thought.
What the thing I found hardest about it is that I didn't know what the plot was until I started writing it, because I knew the vague ideas I'd had for a whole series in the TV version. I knew the characters inside out, but I'm a bit wanky, I suppose, in that it really felt to me like as I got to know the characters more, I knew what they'd do in situations. So I knew what situations would mess them up. So I knew. And I'm too impulsive to sit down and plan because that's boring. I just want to write it. So it wasn't until I was sort of half, three quarters of the way through, I'd go, oh, that needs to happen. And then I go back and like tear a load of it apart and put it back together. But that must have been so frustrating for an editor and a person purchasing my idea that like, well, she doesn't really know what's going to happen, but she knows who it's going to happen to. And that I think is really difficult, that you have to persuade people to trust that you can write your own way. Like, you've got to stop asking me for a detailed plot breakdown because I don't know yet. I won't know until I've done it.
Yeah, I find that interesting because I've spoken to a lot of the authors and the novelists I've spoken to. I plan like everything, so everything's planned out and they kind of know where it's going, but that's not the way I've ever written anything. You know, I've, and so like you kind of, oh, am I, is that why I can't, is that why I'm not very good, because I'm not planning stuff out,
it's boring, and I want to just write and then I want to see what the words do, and I haven't got the attention span to plan. I had ideas and I'd think about, oh, maybe that, and I'd make a note of it. But then it would just slowly like build up in my head. The thought of sitting down and going, here is point A and this is point C. And, oh, that is a good device to use in the middle. And so therefore I will.
Maybe it's because as comedians, I think that's the way you kind of comedy comes, isn't it? It's sort of like you can sit down and write to an extent, but the really good stuff comes from just that sudden inspiration.
Yeah.
Either usually on stage, I find, but sometimes, you know, when you're putting together something, wow, and it's all, and then you surprise yourself. And
yeah.
I think that might be a comedian's instinct. I've not written novels, but I've written sitcoms and things like that. And I like to have no idea where it's going so that when you go, oh, and then this happens. Oh, great. I didn't see that.
Do you ever have that moment where you go, oh, I'm so glad my brain thought of that because I'd never have come up with anything like that.
It almost feels like it wasn't really you. I've just done the copy editor on my book, and you know, and it's 2 or 3 months since I wrote it, and I genuinely can't understand where any of it came from. You're kind of enjoying it. Oh, this is pretty good. You go, how the hell did I write this? I don't remember writing it. How did I write it? You know, but yeah, definitely. You know, I've talked about that a lot in the creative process. It sort of feels like it's beamed into your head, or you know that. But it's obviously something to do with the way the brain works and the way creativity works, that it is sort of being created somewhere else, not by your conscious mind.
Yeah,
and you know, and you let things ruminate, and you know, and have a go at them. And so I think that's good. It's good to know that. And I know there are writers or people, aspirant writers, and people who write who listen to this podcast and who are quite who love this, you know, talking about how things are written. And so it's good to know that there is more than one way of doing it. And I think, you know, obviously there's probably everyone's got a slightly different method, but it's, I think that chaos, creating something out of chaos. And then I think that's why this book feels a bit more real, because it doesn't feel like, you know, because that's not how life is. Life doesn't happen. And then a plot, you know, and I've seen that with people writing sitcoms when I've been on in teams of people writing sitcoms, and they're going, right, now we have the A story and the B story and the C story, and this is going to happen. And you kind of go, well, that's not how life works. And that's not how, you know, what happens is something very unexpected happens.
Did you watch Schitt's Creek?
I loved
that for their dealing with stuff like that. Like every time you thought they were setting up a standard sitcom, A will happen, B will react in the worst possible way to it, causing friction, and then they'll fix it. They managed to introduce the same sort of, uh-oh, there's been a problem, and then solve it in a completely refreshing way by avoiding the high drama of stupidity. And it was so beautifully done. It's one of my favourite things ever, watching that show and just watching them avoid all the cliches of sitcom writing. Not that I don't love like that sort of thing, but it just feels like we've done that to death. Like a bit of reality in your sitcom, even with something that is so non-reality like Schitt's Creek, it's just such a nice way of writing.
And did you do any like field research? Did you go and play netball again? Did you go and sort of watch people playing netball, or did you just use your imagination? I mean, was it during COVID when you were writing this possibly? So it might
go a couple of years ago when I was writing the TV version. A couple of my friends, like 5 or 6 of my friends, play netball on a Monday night. And I did toy with the idea of joining the team, but obviously with stand-up, you can't really have evening hobbies, so it's a bit of a nightmare. But I did go down quite a few times and watch them play and sort of picking up on the things that people are shouting and what it's like when all the teams are gathering to play and how quick and fast netball is. It was more that vibe of what it's like when you get down to the court, like how's it run, where do the referees come from, all that sort of stuff was really interesting.
Yeah. Good. Well, you should be very pleased with it. I'm glad you are so pleased with it. It's very enjoyable. Pivot, do go and buy it. You will enjoy it. Are you working on something else? Would you come back to these characters, or have you got another idea for a novel?
To come back to these characters, I have got an idea for a second novel in this world. I have been soundly told by the publisher it depends how this one sells, so buy it. For goodness sake, buy it. And I've got a few other book ideas, which at the moment I'm going back into podcasting again for a bit, but then I think, like, yeah, you know, when you just, is your attention span like this, you're like, well, I've done a book for a while, so now I need some of this. I want to go and do podcasty things and something that's less me sitting at my desk on my own, and then I'll come back.
I think definitely with writing, I find it, you know, very hard to, it's very hard to do 2 or 3 things. I used to do 2 or 3 things at once, but you've sort of mainly got to concentrate on one thing when I'm writing a book. And then when it's done, it really does feel like I need to not.
Yeah.
You know, I actually suddenly had like 2 or 3 ideas for other books, but I'm in no rush to go and do them, you know.
And
so it's
complicated, because especially with me being like a relatively unheard of author, well, an unheard of as an author, and I'm doing all right as a comedian, but it's not like I'm a household name comedian. So in terms of establishing yourself as an author, you have to try and write within a similar vein of your other books. You can't suddenly go, well, now I want to write a murder mystery and then I'm going to write a high octane thriller. You've got to sort of set yourself up as an author who does a certain thing. So I think if I leapt straight into another book now, I'd be scared of it being the same story with different characters. Like, I want to go away until another group of people present themselves to me and they are as real to me as the pivot characters are.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. I have to say, Laura Lex, I think, is, I mean, it's an excellent name anyway, but it's a very good author name.
Thanks.
Do you not think so? Like, it looks very good on the book. Laura Lex. I think it's just this. I think there's something very authorish about the name Laura Lex.
I've got my dad to thank for that. It was my nickname as a kid. It's not my real surname, but my middle name is Alex. And my dad, when I'm little, used to call me Laura Lex as a run together. So that's how I picked it as a stage name. And a pen name now.
It's a very good choice. I think I can just see that shooting off the shelves and coming out at people. It's a good name. And do you read a lot yourself? Do you read other people's books? And what are you reading? What do you recommend or that you're reading or have read recently?
So at the moment, I've got about three different books on the go. I've just finished The Empire of Pain, the thing about the Sackler family and the OxyContin opioid scandal. So I was reading that as a non-fiction, but it reads as fluidly as a fiction. It is incredible. And then audiobook, I'm listening to the latest it's not the latest one, but the latest one I'm up to in the Marcus Didius Falco Roman, Lindsay Davis's series about a Roman investigator. So I'm quite enjoying that. And then I'm also reading Pope Lonergan's book. Have you had Pope on this?
No, I haven't.
Oh, he's brilliant. He's a comic and he's written this book about being a care home assistant. Sort of like This Is Gonna Hurt, but about the care industry. And he's got such a dark sense of humour. but it's really, really lovely to read. I like a lot of high fantasy fiction. I like a sort of holiday read, but I've just finished Brandon Sanderson's first book in the Way of Kings series. And it was like a 45-hour audiobook. And you know when somebody doesn't explain the lore of their fantasy world, they just let it evolve as the book goes on. That sort of thing is my favourite type of book.
Yeah. There are a lot of books out there, aren't there, Laura? When you this even just doing this podcast has made me realize, I thought, why is my book's not doing so well, as I thought they might. Oh, it's because there's a million books. Every time a book comes out, there's a million books come out. So
I find that on the Amazon thing, like, have you got low enough self-esteem that you sometimes look how your book's selling?
Of course.
And then it tells you the ranking. So you're like, oh, my book is selling the 30,000th most selling book in the world, like, of all books. But then how many different genres there are, like, in crime and sport, in humour and women, in friendship and onions. And you're like, how are all of these different categories got enough books in them that I can be that far down the ranking?
Well, 30,000 is pretty good. I'd be quite, I mean, maybe not in the week of publication, but it's not bad. I've certainly seen myself at like 273,000. I've certainly seen books down at that. So there are a lot of, I mean, because I suppose it's every book, it's not that chart, it's every book in the world that's ever been, basically, with Amazon, isn't it?
It's so
mad. And once you get beyond, I'm guessing, 20,000, there probably isn't much. You sell one copy and you jump up. You jump up 10,000 places. It's only when you get to the very top that it sort of gets that you have to sell hundreds of thousands of books to make a difference. Look, Laura, as always, it's lovely to talk to you, and thank you for having me on your podcast, which will be out in September.
Tell people
what that podcast is called as well. We might as well plug that.
Yeah, Richard's going to be on National Treasures podcast in September. We're restarting in August. And in that podcast, we get sent to a location, in this case, Cheddar Gorge. And me and Will Duggan, my good buddy, we go for the day out. We record the podcast at the location, in this case, Cheddar Gorge. And then we sat down with Richard and we asked him why he'd sent us to, in this case, Cheddar Gorge, and what he loved about it. And then we do some research based on your suggestions about Cheddar Gorge. So not all comedians will send us to Cheddar Gorge.
It's not Cheddar Gorge every week, though it should be, because Cheddar Gorge is the only place to go. Look, always fantastic to talk to Laura. I hope I see you very soon in the flesh, but it's also nice to talk to you on Zoom. So thank you very much, Laura Lex. Next week is Guy Lexiner. I think that's, I'm going to have to ask him how to pronounce that. this professor, this is how classy this is, goes from you doing your stupid little netball book to Professor Guy Lechlinger, the man who tasted words. I mean, come on, that is...
Oh, you should have told me. I could have smoked a pipe while we had the conversation to bring mine up a notch.
There's a chapter about aphantasia in there as well, so you should...
What's that called?
The Man Who Tasted Words.
All right, The Man Who Tasted Words.
Look out for that. All right, we'll be back next week with that. Anyway, thank you, Laura.
Thank you.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue check mark next to that thing you love and be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Thanks very much for listening to the podcast. Go to gofasterstripe.com for fantastic downloads and books and to join the Go Faster Stripe Club. And get loads of stuff from really interesting comedians. Help little Chris Evans knock that one out. That would be lovely. All right, richardherring.com for all my gigs. Hope to see you at a gig. Come and say hi after if you've enjoyed these podcasts. Don't come if you haven't enjoyed them and say you haven't enjoyed them. It will make me feel sad.